We have a rare opportunity today. Actually, the good thing about doing issues, etc., is that these kind of opportunities are actually not that rare in the first place. To talk about Christianity in other parts of the world, American Christians are, without a doubt, perhaps the most parochial, short-sighted Christians in the world. They tend to think of Christianity as purely within the borders of their own experience and their own nation, when in fact the majority of Christians exist outside our experience and our borders. We'll be talking about Christianity in Russia today in the first half hour of Issues, etc. Pastor Gottfried Spieth and Roman Heidemann join us, and they're here in Studio A with us. A little later in the program, we'll be talking with Dr. Russell Moore. This is going to be quite interesting. We spoke some weeks ago about this Revolve New Testament. It's called a Bible zine because it's not a Bible, it's not a magazine, it's not a study Bible. They call it an inspirational Bible product. We'll be talking about that. Dr. Russell Moore is an instructor in Christian theology at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. That comes up a little later in the program. In the second hour, the second half there, Doug LeBlanc joins us. Church conventions. The summer is usually the time for all the mainline denominations and the others to have their conventions, their assemblies. Doug LeBlanc has covered 7 in his career as associate editor of Christianity Today magazine, and the most recent 2 during this summer, the General Convention of the Episcopal Church USA and of the Presbyterian Church USA. He has written an article in the latest issue of Christianity Today titled Resolved Conventions Are Hell. We'll find out what he has to say. And then in the last hour of the program, open lines for your questions and your comments. I promised yesterday that I would get into this article from Forbes magazine called Mega Churches, Mega Businesses. In one of the things that struck me as interesting here is I looked at the chart of the churches that are considered to be the biggest churches in the United States. The one that we talk about the most often, that gets the most press, Willow Creek in South Barrington, Illinois, really is kind of in the middle of the pack there. It's not the biggest church by any stretch of the imagination, but I'd like to use that as the opportunity, after we've discussed the Forbes article, to talk a bit about Willow Creek and something you may not know about Willow Creek. And that is that this reputedly, very conservative, middle America megachurch actually has a rather liberal streak in it. The evidence? They have female pastors. Have you heard your pastor ever say your pastor thinks Willow Creek is just the bee's knees and constantly talking about how we ought to be more like, we could learn something from Willow Creek, from Bill Hybels and those guys up there? Does he ever mention that they have a woman on staff as their pastor? And that the way that they arrived at this decision had very little to do with reading the Bible and determining that such a thing was either permissible or commanded in the Bible. They arrived at it because they said, look, what flies around here is what works, and this is what works. A female pastor. So we'll do it. And they did, since 1997. We'll talk about that during Open Lines. Get your reaction as well. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We're going to spend the first half hour talking about Christianity in Russia. Our guests joining us here in Studio A have come a long ways. Pastor Gottfried Spieth is theological assistant to the Bishop of Moscow in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Russia and other states. Pastor Spieth, welcome back to Issues, etc. And he is joined today, also here in Studio A, by Roman Heidemann, who is chairman of the Congregation of St. Gertrude's in Katerinburg, Russia. Is that a fine enough pronunciation there for that word?
That's right.
I'll do my best. Welcome to both of you.
Hello.
Pastor Spieth, would you give us a picture of Christianity and the church in Russia before 1989?
Before 1989, you had the 70 years old period of communism, and of course in this time the church life was on a very low level, and I think I must not repeat all the tragic history. I will only bring out one thing, that after World War II, after the death of Stalin, there was a little more liberal atmosphere, liberal not in the theological sense, mm-hmm. but in the political sense, that especially in the Brezhnev era, the persecution was not so cruel, and it was more psychological. And so the Orthodox Church and also the Protestant churches and the Catholic Church could develop somehow, especially because the Orthodox Church was used as some sort of unity for the country. And this was especially in the last 10 years of the Soviet Union very important. Communist leaders felt that the land would soon be divided. They felt the crisis, and they gave the Orthodox Church the chance to help them to keep the country together. That Orthodox Church should play the role of a peacemaker between the different parts of society and between the widespread part of the country. And Orthodox Church agreed to play this role, and so it became some sort of state church. And the initial point was the year 1888. This was the 1,000 years anniversary of baptism of Russia. 10,000 years ago, by Kirill and Method, these Slavic missionaries of Greece, the gospel was brought to Eastern Europe, and so after 1,000 years, the anniversary, the festival was brought out, and Gorbachev himself promoted this very much, and this was some key point. And after this date, there was some sort of revival in the Orthodox Church and also in the Protestant churches. But then, in the middle of the night, the situation became very twilight.
Mm-hmm. So the Orthodox Church was, at least late in the communist era, given an opportunity for really the purposes of keeping the country together,
yes.
To flourish a bit.
To flourish a bit, and also for the disappointed people who were disappointed of the economic situation. It was like an escape in a mystical space, mm-hmm. and to feel good in this liturgy, and the Orthodox liturgy is great. And it's really experience, a spiritual experience. And this was a real help for many people. And there was a Reform Orthodox movement. One key person was Alexander Mehn, from a Jewish background. Then he converted to Christianity, to Orthodox Christianity. And he was some sort of, if he would have lived longer, he was murdered. But if he would have lived longer, he perhaps he would have become some sort of Orthodox Martin Luther. It was very great hope in this what he did.
Before that time, before the death of Stalin, what was it that made the practice of religion, in particular Christianity, and communism incompatible with one another?
Incompatible.
They could not coexist. They could not exist together.
Yes, this was of state ideology. Because in the first 10 years of communism, in the 20s, it was not so hard. The attacks was only against Orthodox Church, because Orthodox was in a close combination with the old Tsaristic regime. And so the most heavy attack of communism was against Orthodox Church. And the Protestants had in the 20s some sort of freedom. Especially because some Protestants, especially the Mennonites, had some, as the communists thought, some theories which should be similar to communist ideology. But things changed in the 30s. In the 30s, all Christians were persecuted. And this was because these fanatic atheists gain more and more influence. And so this was also the time when Stalin was very suspicious of his closest friends, and this was this heavy time of inside Communist Party and movement, this big struggle, and he was suspicious against everybody, and it was it was a crazy situation. And
Roman, what do you remember from that time when Christianity was genuinely persecuted in Russia?
I myself remember very little, but four of my grandfathers were killed in the 30s because they were believers, and they were, you know, they were considered to be enemies of these of communist country. So, and some kind is a memory of my family, because I was born slightly later. But nevertheless, my parents, they were afraid, you know, to worship legally, because it was very dangerous.
How did you worship during that time? How did your parents worship during that time?
Well, you know, it was a kind of a clandestine worship, and people, they and yeah, my parents and their friends, they gathered together in small groups, and they prayed, and they wrote down their prayers and songs, and it was a situation before the invention of printing, you know, because even Bible was restored by memory, and it was written by hands, and it was multiplicated like that, because we got the opportunity to have these printed Bibles only in 1992, I believe. So, well, I saw this, well, I got this, my first Bible in 1992.
Pastor Spieth, tell us about the church in Russia today. What has changed?
Do you mean church in the common sense, also all churches?
Yes, Christendom, yes. in Russia.
Also, the Orthodox Church in Russia has the most dominant role. This role of a sort of state church or guarantee for unity, it has under the government of Mr. Putin even been stronger and stronger. There are military chaplaincies, and they have influence in the mass media, and there is now discussed religious education under Orthodox control in the public school system, though theoretically there is a separation between state and church, but this is only on the paper. And the Catholic Church suffers many under the pressure of the Orthodox Church. But this has some historical roots, because in the Ukraine there is a big and very long struggle between Orthodox and Catholic Church, and in the Ukraine, the Orthodox Church, the Catholic Church is very successful, and more successful than the Orthodox Church, and that's why the Moscow Patriarchate is struggling against Rome, and the Pope has no chance to come into Russia, though he wants very much. And the Protestant Church is, how to say it, they are considered a sect, but they. Business as usual. They make their evangelical campaigns. There is a church growth movement even in these Pentecostal and Baptist orientated churches, and they grow very much. It's not so well known. They have not so much influence in the mass media, but they do very well. And the Lutherans, they play a very specific role. They count as historic church because they are very old, 400 years. They count as well accepted. Even the Orthodox Church respects our rating, because we have in the former tsaristic time, we were part of this state church system, because the Tsars were partly of Lutheran heritage. And so this helps us very much to have a good rating, and we try to keep on this heritage in a very confessional way.
Folks, if you have a question or a comment on Christianity in Russia, feel free to give us a call, 505-7850, or 1-800-730-2727. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Pastor Gottfried Spieth is our guest here in Studio A, and he is joined by Roman Heidemann. Let's talk a bit about a distinction that you made that our listeners may not have noticed, and that is the distinction between Protestant and Lutheran.
Yes, you
do not consider yourselves to be Protestant. Can you explain that distinction?
Yes, in this sense that we Lutherans feel more traditional and inside Christendom, in our Lutheran tradition, liturgy plays a very big role, and especially in Eastern Europe and in Russia, liturgy plays a very important role. This is also because of the Orthodox influence in the whole nation, and this has some influence also inside Lutheran Church, that the liturgy has to be very solemn. And it's a very strong, almost military expression of faith. There is no entertainment, no fun. This low level church services, they have no chance in Lutheranism in Russia. And the vertical communication with God, with the Holy Trinity, is much more important than the horizontal communication. And people wants to be integrated into this, unification of the church with the heavenly choir, with the angels. And so Russian people have a hierarchical feeling, a feeling of obedience, and not this emancipated feeling. And all these patterns, they tend to establish a strong liturgy. Our liturgy in Lutheran Church is the same as in the Tsaristic time. Only very few autographic improvements have been done. And this is also the reason Russian language has in the last 100 years not very much changed. Though communism tried it, but the language system is very stable. And so Russians like this solemn language, and that you have this feeling to that the heart is kept in the open the hearts to the higher dimension.
This must strike you then as odd to make occasional trips here to the United States and observe American Christianity, which, to much to the chagrin of many of us, seems to have completely forgotten that worship is about a genuine communion with the Holy Trinity, and it has been turned into entertainment of sorts. What's your assessment of that as you observe it from someone outside?
When I look at the American situation, it's a great contrast, and I. Honestly speaking, some elements of contemporary church service is like Disneyland. It's artificial. It's artificial. It's not deep. It's not deep and not high. It's on the surface. But I will not be unjust. I will not condemn it. I think God's grace is so great that He can tolerate it. But hopefully, by God's grace, things will be changed. I will not say that these are no Christians. Mm-hmm. We heard the Willow Creek and only one keyboard. I will not say these guys are not Christians. They try to do the best, but they do not know the sources and their own heritage. They do not know it, and that's why they dig in the wrong sources or holes.
We're talking with Pastor Gottfried Spieth and Roman Heidemann about Christianity in Russia. We have a few minutes left. Would you be kind enough to stay with us for a few minutes after this break?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. One more question before we go. What is the greatest challenge today for Lutheran Christians in Russia?
The greatest challenge is a theological one, because there is inside the Lutheran church bodies a struggle between some liberal influence and confessional influence. Unfortunately, there is an influence from the German state church and from other mainline churches, from the LWF, and they try to import this mainline theology also to Eastern Europe. And because some of our young pastors or also elder pastors are a little naive. Deep in their heart, they are very confessional, but they are very bad educated. And so they are a little naive. And if some guy comes from the West, this is like a revelation. And if he keeps smiling and preach some crazy things, then they think, oh, they listen not so carefully. And so they get this bad influence. And even they often do not know this bad influence. And so education, training, we must have a Lutheran elite, an intellectual Lutheran elite. And the conditions are good, because education in Russia is good. This was some of the plus. Communism is very bad, but one plus it had, that he has made possible education for everybody on an average bit and even high level. And so our people must be trained, and they must be learn that not everybody and everything which comes from the West is optimal.
Roman, with only about 1 minute here before we go, is there a legacy of distrust for the West among the Russian people even today?
Well, it is, because, you know, Russia itself is a very conservative country, and Russians are... And, well, not Russians, Russians, a nationality. They are very conservative by themselves, this people that inhabit Russia. And, well, all these Western ideas, they never brought any good to Russia, starting from communism and liberalism and so on and so forth. They usually lead to the destruction of the country. And in Russia, there is a strong resistance to these ideas, especially in the area I live. So, fortunately, we managed to struggle against these things.
That's Roman Heidemann. He is chairman of the Congregation of St. Gertrude's in Katerinburg, Russia. We also have Pastor Gottfried Spieth, theological assistant to the Bishop of Moscow in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Russia and other states. If you have a question or a comment on Christianity in Russia, feel free to give us a call during this break. This is a great time to call. 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or 505-7850, 505-7850. When we come back, we're going to talk about the state of the Christian layperson in Russia, and also about the education of pastors, and what the general economic and social conditions in Russia do, and what challenges they present to Christianity in Russia as well. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. When we conclude this conversation, we'll have a bit of open lines for your questions and your comments. And then in the second hour, we'll be talking with Dr. Russell Moore about the new Revolve New Testament, and Doug LeBlanc about church conventions. He's written an article in Christianity Today called "Resolved Conventions Are Hell." We'll be right back.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, etc.
What is Christian freedom? What does St. Paul mean when he writes to the Colossian Christians, "Whatever you do in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ"? What does it mean to do something in the name of Jesus? You'll find answers to these questions and more in our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September, the Concordia Commentary on Colossians by Dr. Paul Dieterding. You can order the Concordia Commentary on the Book of Colossians online. Visit our website, issuesetc.org, click on the What's New section, and you'll find information on the book. Or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September is the Concordia Commentary on the Book of Colossians.
Now this Global Minute focuses prayer on 3 million people living in Iran who believe in their rightly guided Muslim leaders. Getting caviar out of the ocean is one of the jobs of the Mazandaranis. They're an ethnic group in Iran who fish, farm, and do business in a fertile valley located between Tehran and the southernmost portion of the Caspian Sea. They're Shiite Muslims who belong to the most important division in that type of Islam. According to the Global Prayer Digest magazine, they believe their group had 12 rightly guided Muslim teachers. They believe the last one is still alive, even though he disappeared about 100 years ago. The Mazandaranis refer to him as the awaited and the hidden Imam. They believe he'll come before the second coming of Christ. Pray for these Shiite Muslims to hear and respond to truth about Jesus Christ. Pray for unreached people by logging on to the website missionvisionnetwork.org. That's missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Are you ready to really understand abortion? That's the title of Daryl Chen's article in the September issue of Glamour magazine, and it's well worth reading. Chen writes about some abortion providers who call themselves the November Gang. They offer intensive counseling to women who come to their clinics, and that counseling often includes spirituality. What would you say to God right now? They ask. What do you think God would say back to you? When women request it, Chen writes, they can pray over their fetuses and even perform ad hoc baptisms. I wonder, is that compassionate or cynical? This approach of the November Gang is not appreciated by all. Chen writes, mainstream abortion rights proponents don't think that such candor is helpful. This article doesn't take sides, so both pro-choicers and pro-lifers can find justification for their respective and opposite positions. That said, the article also shows that some abortion providers have come to acknowledge that pro-life concerns about the emotional and spiritual well-being of the mother are valid. Here's hoping they'll keep coming to the conclusion that abortion is not the answer.
Earlier today in the Bible study, we went through chapters 11 through 15 of the book of Leviticus, and we found out one thing for sure. It's not good to be unclean. But what meaning is there for New Testament Christians? We talked about it earlier today with Pastor Mark Hawkinson. If you'd like to hear the repeat of that program, join us tonight. We repeat the Bible study at 7:05.
The Bible study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to be talking about the righteousness that is discussed in the Old Testament. Dr. Walter A. Meyer III of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest. This is our ongoing, continuing, and occasional series on terms in the Bible, taking one term and exploring it in depth. And if anyone is familiar with Dr. Walter A. Meyer III, he is well qualified to explore that term righteousness in the Old Testament. Also, suffering with Christ, the Christian life and vocation in the book of Colossians, the author of our Issues Etc. book of the month for September, the Concordia Commentary on Colossians, Dr. Paul Dieterding joins us tomorrow. And then we'll get our religion roundup with one of our, well, he's becoming one of my favorite guests, Uwe Simonetto of United Press International. He's religion editor for UPI. We'll get a religion roundup. He always has interesting things that he's written about and he likes to talk about. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon. It's September the 24th. If you'd like to join us as we continue our conversation on Christianity in Russia, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Joined here in Studio A by Pastor Gottfried Spieth, who's theological assistant to the Bishop of Moscow of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Russia and other states, and Roman Heidemann, who is chairman of the Congregation of St. Gertrude's at Katerinburg, Russia. Roman, tell us about the state of the Christian lay people in Russia today? How would you describe their temperament, their level of theological education, how well catechized they are?
Well, frankly speaking, I'm one of these lay people, and so I will I shall describe myself. So all in all, we are well. Our education is a practical education, because until the recent time we couldn't go to any educational establishments, and right now we face a problem, because we have a seminary near St. Petersburg, and this is a seminary inside this German Lutheran church. But there is a big problem that this seminary is under the influence of the liberal German church. And that's why we do not agree with their position. And, well, of course, it's a kind of a blockade. Well, because there's a kind of a conflict. And right now there's a lasting conflict between this ongoing students and their teachers. Because, as I have already mentioned, Russia is a very conservative country, and people and Lutherans in Russia, they're rather conservative, because they have this very substantial conservative background. So until the present time, they were not under the influence of this liberal trends in the Europe, because, first of all, in Soviet times we were isolated, and then this conservative traditions, they still exist. And but there is a very somehow remarkable thing. So we are like children. So, and we, when we started to organize our congregation, the most logical thing we did, we addressed our German brothers and sisters, and we stretched them there our hand. And what did they do? They put stone in this hand, the stone of liberalism. And right now we have this struggle, well, against them, and we cannot understand, and we won't understand them, because the things they preach and the things they teach, they are very far from traditions of Russia, and they're very far from the traditions of Lutheran people in Russia.
Do pastors and congregations in Russia have access not only now to the printed Bible, but do they have access to the foundational documents of the Lutheran Reformation, namely the Book of Concord, the Lutheran Confessions?
This is a very interesting and very good question. They used to have. And Lutheran Heritage Fund has printed, several years ago, this fund printed, there's a certain amount of Concordia books. But right now they are not available in Russia, because these stocks are, well, they're somehow, well, Russia ran out of these stocks. And we have several warehouses in Russia, and one of them in Katharinburg with books of published by Lutheran Heritage Fund. And, well, I personally have very good relations with a guy that runs this stock, and his name is Sergei Glushkov, and we are friends for many years. And in June, he gave me 9 books of this Concordia, but he underlined as last books. So, and when I asked him, why people from the Lutheran Heritage Society do not publish more, he said, go to America and ask them.
So that's why you are
yes,
here.
Yes, that's why I'm here, and I'm have a privilege to ask people who print, who in charge of this Concordia books, guys, we need some more in Russia, please.
What is the state of the pastorate? Roman has described the fact that the seminary with whom you have access is influenced by liberal theology.
Yes.
That's obviously a problem. What is the state of the average pastor theologically in Russia today?
The average pastor is, under influence from different directions. Deep in his heart and his mind is this confessional tradition which he has got from his forefathers and which was never interrupted, though communism tried it. But then in his mind there is many ideas and there are many magazines from this and from that organization, and so he is confused. His theology for practical what he does and the liturgy and his sermons, they are good. They are quite good and confessional, but he has no intellectual resources to say why this is true. He only knows, oh, this is the tradition. It must be somehow good. But that there is also systematic theology and there are good dogmatic reasons why Lutheran confessions are the true and adequate expression of the scripture. This he cannot understand because nobody has taught it to him.
So if there were if it were by God's grace and God willing, the opportunity to put solid Lutheran theological books into the hands of the pastors, that church could only benefit.
Of course, and it must be done by some crash courses or by some seminars. It's not so important to have another seminary or that. It's much more important to have crash courses and to have seminars at different strategic points inside Russia, and to keep together the pastors and the diacons and the vicars several times a year, and then to compensate the lack of education they have.
Let's talk a bit about the social and economic conditions in Russia today and how that affects the church as well. Describe what the social economic conditions are in that country now.
Yes, as I am informed, things are a little increasing in the Putin era. This depends also on the oil price. Russia exports many oil, and so economic, which is in the 90s, it has been on a very low level, and it's very slowly increasing. But unfortunately, there is no middle class. There are some extreme rich people who swim in money, but there is no middle class. And 70-80% of Russian nation live from $100-$200 a month. And you can imagine that this is also for our congregations very difficult. They cannot exist by their own, only partially, but we need some sponsors from outside for some 10, 15, 20 years in the future.
It doesn't sound that different from the situation that prevailed during the time of the Apostle Paul, when there are Judean Christians who are in need, you know, the very heartland of we wouldn't have Christianity in the United States had we not had Christianity first in Eastern and Western Europe, and it sounds like there's a time for our resources to flow back to our brothers there as well. Last question for both of you. We'll start with you, Roman, and allow Pastor Spieth to conclude. Are you encouraged with regard to the future of Christianity in Russia? Are you hopeful?
Yes, and I'm hopeful not because, I see this, brilliant perspective myself, but because I see the development of our congregation, and our congregation, so it's a remarkable congregation that we have more than 100 people, and more than a half is young people from 7 to 25, and. So for me is a blessing and a big hope that I Well, frankly speaking, I cannot explain it myself, because I can say that only by God's grace we have these children, and these children, they bring their friends and their relatives and their classmates, or some of them are in universities, they bring their groupmates and their students to the congregation, and they not only sit and listen their sermons, but they participate in the church life, in the life of our congregation, and they take very active part in missions that are affected by our congregation. And so I see this future, well, in the Catherineburg in particular, that many young people come, and this is a blessing for us.
I saw a video. Now, this was of a small congregation in Siberia, but the congregation was mostly children. And I was very intrigued by this. They said the parents, there's a serious problem with alcoholism and unemployment, and it's the children who are more often than not in the divine service on a Sunday morning. Is that true, Roman?
Yes, it is true, and I see the answer in children, well, the most free people in Russia are children, because we're this middle, well, I'm 36, I don't know whether it's middle or not. So, but we're, well, I in my childhood, I and in my, you know, when I was a student in the university, I suffered this very strong pressure of this anti-religious propaganda. And I'd like to confess, I still bear this burden. And so I am somehow in these limits, and I try to get rid of it. And so, but still I bear this burden, they don't.
Pastor Spieth, the same question to you, and then we have a caller on the line who has several questions as well. Your hopes for the future of the church in Russia?
Of course, because our Lord Jesus Christ promised that his gospel has an overwhelming power all over the world. And I think especially in Eastern Europe and in the Asiatic part of Russia, because this is a special territory. There are some enlightenment influence, some liberal influence of French Revolution and of humanism and emancipation culture never have reached this Euro-Asiatic complex. People are in some kind immune against it. In this case, they resist the globalization. They resist against the cultural globalization. And so there is tabula rasa in their minds. They are so disappointed from communism. They are also disappointed from wild capitalism. And so the field is white for the harvest.
Let's take a phone call here before we wrap up our conversation. Sandy is waiting on the line, and she's calling from Alton, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Sandy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Your guests are fascinating. What a mind-opening explanation of what the church in another portion of the world has gone through. A couple questions. Could your guests give a short outline, possibly, to the type of liturgy that is used today? Is it similar to what we use in divine service? And also, does he believe, or do they believe, that the liturgy, the common liturgy, was a cohesive factor in keeping the church unified during persecution of the communist era?
Excellent questions. Thank you very much, Sandy, and thank you for giving us a call. The first question she raises has to do with the basic outline of the liturgy. She's curious about how it compares to the liturgical practices here among Lutherans in the United States.
That I should give a comment to liturgical practice in the United States.
Well, no, that to compare the outline of the liturgy. What does your liturgy? What does it consist in?
In Russia or in
yes, in Russia. We have elements like the service begins with a confession.
Yes, of course, and then the Kyrie and the Gloria, and then the collect the prayer of collect of Kollektengebet in German, mm-hmm. and then the Niceno-Constantinopolitanum or the Apostolic Creed, and then the Sermon, and then in German I can only say it, or in Russia, das große Fürbittgebet, requests to God. General prayer in a very solemn way. And then Holy Communion, and all this is done in a very solemn manner, and the pastor sings the liturgy. Mm-hmm. This is so the order.
Mm. Her second question for both of you, beginning with you, Pastor Spieth: to what degree did the liturgy help hold the Christian church together during times of persecution?
In persecution, it was a little different in the Lutheran church, because in persecution time, because of almost all pastors were killed or set in prison, lay people had to uphold church life. And these lay people, of course, were not trained in liturgy, or they had a very, very low-level liturgy. And in this time, the liturgy was prayer, singing, reading from the scriptures, and reading the sermon from books. But this was a basic liturgy which was very stable, and no experiment. And they read this old sermons from Martin Luther or from other confessional pastors.
And these things you mentioned before, Roman, the way your parents worshipped clandestinely, and how they would write down their prayers and their songs and these sermons, these things sustained the Christians in Russia during that time of persecution.
Friendly speaking, yes, because this was a kind of a memory of these old times that Russian Lutheran Church existed and worshipped. And my ancestors and my parents and these lay people that fortunately were alive after all these horrible times, they recalled and they preached and they sang these songs, and they worshipped like their ancestors. And so this was this kind of a confessional, or as we say in Russia, conservative. We almost do not use this word confessionals. We name things as they are. So we do not use this political, how to say it?
The political terms?
No, this...
politically correct
politically correct terms, that we think that if it is conservative, that it's conservative. Yes, and so they bear these conservative sermon through times, through years.
They read the sermons. And
yes, these sermons were written, and wrote these sermons from their memory. Well, these old people, they memorized this sermon because they were experienced this sermon from their early childhood, and then they gave these sermons to their children and grandchildren, so in writings, and they remembered these songs, and so it was, like frozen from this pre-revolutionary or pre-communist times.
When freedom dawned in Russia and Christians began to gather together in a legal way again, how was that ancient form of worship, the liturgy, restored to the church? Was it again recalled from memory and kind of put together?
No. There were some specialists, liturgical specialists, who had access to the old archives of the old Tsaristic Lutheran Church, and they digged out this old liturgy and they printed it from anew. Only a little autographic changes, but it was the same liturgy. And some of our very old members, they remind this liturgy, But it's not depends not of physical reminding. It's in the soul of the people. It's in their hearts. Even if they have not, if they are too young to remember this old liturgy, it's like in a collective remembrance of our congregations.
How do people in Russia, unbelievers, how do they find out about the Lutheran Church in Russia?
Yes, what we experience is that many intellectuals, also academic trained people from universities, from high schools, students or professors, they are both disappointed from the atheistic system, but also from the very illiterate Orthodox system, and they go to Lutheran Church because they want to hear a sermon which is on a biblical and confessional fundament. They want to understand why they should believe and what reasons and what very good reasons Lutheran faith has, and they find the answers of their skeptical questions easier in a Lutheran sermon than in the Orthodox rituals.
We have but 2 minutes. Very quickly, we'll go back to the phones. Kurt is calling from his car. Kurt, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes. Is it not true that the public school system in Russia took the children and really catechized them in atheism?
So, thank you for the question. Very quickly, for you, Pastor Spieth.
Yeah. Of course, the atheistic education was very strong, but it was only a ritual, and it was on the surface, and it often went not to the hearts. And so it's now, as I said it, the hearts are empty for new information and hopefully for the right information.
Pastor Gottfried Spieth, thank you very much for being our guest again on Issues, Etc. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Roman Heidemann, thank you as well for being our guest.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks a lot.
Pastor Gottfried Spieth is theological assistant to the Bishop of Moscow of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Russia and other states. Roman Heidemann is chairman of the Congregation of St. Gertrude's in Katerinburg, Russia. This is the kind of thing that Christians ought to, you know, I said at the beginning of our conversation, become so very short-sighted. We forget that there are deep and abiding needs of Christians elsewhere in the world, and there are people who are coming again not only to the freedom of economic and social freedom and religious freedom, but the freedom that is given through the gospel of Jesus Christ. People who for 70 years had no access to this out on the streets or in anything that was legal. They had access to it only through their parents or their grandparents. Their pastors were gone, killed, put in prison. It's a testimony to the amazing grace by which God sustains his church, regardless of our circumstances. And now that freedom has dawned again, we are being called upon to support them in every way. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc. We'll be right back after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.